Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. Welcome to Let's Get Busy, a weekly podcast where I talk shop and get down to business with authors, illustrators, kidlit notables, and everyone in between. I'm Matthew Winner, an elementary school librarian, author of the Busy Librarian blog, and your host. This is episode number 158 with Ovi Nedelcu, author-illustrator of Just Like Daddy, published by POW Kids Books. Ovi and I chat at length about process, specifically getting into composition, mirroring images, and working through gesture drawings. His art on Just Like Daddy offers up so much for the eye to explore, and it's cool to hear how Ovi's background in animation lends itself to designing a picture book. If you like what you hear, I encourage you to download other episodes of Let's Get Busy on your computer or handheld device by subscribing through your preferred podcast host, like the Stitcher app or iTunes, or by visiting the Let's Get Busy homepage directly. Rating the podcast through stars or reviews on Stitcher or iTunes actually helps the podcast reach a greater audience, which also translates to these podcast hosting tools recommending Let's Get Busy to other listeners, which is a very good thing. Definitely do that if you want to help bring the chats to even more ears. And on that note, it's time to start episode number 158 of the podcast with Ovi Nedelcu. Let's get busy! Welcome to the Let's Get Busy podcast, Ovi Nedelcu. I am excited to talk to you.
Hey, man. How's it going?
It's going wonderfully. Congratulations on the release of Just Like Daddy.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
It's a fantastic book. Hey, I named it a best book ever this week.
Yes, you did. Oh, yeah. Thanks, thanks for doing that, by the way.
Oh, my word. Totally. Thanks for the publisher sending me a copy. I love your book. I love that it's clearly a book written by someone who has kids. Because of just knowing the way I feel like when I read it, as much as my son reading it with me, I feel like there were these moments where I thought, oh, you get it. You get me.
Yeah.
You know what this is like. Why don't I just give you a second, though, to sort of tell the story of your story, give a little synopsis of Just Like Daddy, and then I'd love to jump in and talk about everything behind it.
Yeah, sure. So the story is basically about a boy and his, you know, his perception of what it's like to be a grown up and the reality thereof. And so it's kind of like a charming concept book, you know, where it goes back and forth between a day in the life of a boy and what he's doing and what he thinks his dad is doing. And then you turn a page and you see what dad is actually doing. So. It just kind of came from observations around my house, like you said, you know, just observing my kids, trying to mimic things I would do, doing exercises or, you know, whatnot, washing the dishes or who knows what, just little things around the house, you know, and then my wife would point them out. She's like, oh, look, they're doing it just like daddy, you know?
Oh,
so
yes.
That's kind of like what sparked the idea. And then from there, it almost wrote itself, you know, because there were so many moments where, you know, you're doing something and they're trying to like copy you, you know, and you just think about, oh yeah, they think this is amazing, you know? So.
Yeah. The most mundane thing they think is outstanding. My son, when, he's four, and when we take a shower together. Mostly it's bath time and we're playing. Mm-hmm. Every once in a while we'll take a shower together, like when we are out mowing the lawn or whatever.
Yeah.
And I have this habit of shaving in the shower.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever he sees my shaving gel come out, he wants me to rub it on his chin. Uh-huh. And then he, you know, takes whatever. He usually tries to take the squeegee, which I'm like, right. Dude, that's disgusting. Don't do that. But that he's also a 4-year-old. Uh-huh. No, but he wants to just mimic. And you think, like, this is, kid, one day you're going to detest shaving your face.
Yeah, right.
But for now, it's like an act of adoration.
Right, yeah. And by the way, TMI on the shower thing, but oh, yeah, I agree. Just kidding.
Sorry to ruin kidding. The mental image for the people at home, but I do clean myself every once in a while.
I'm totally kidding. Know what? My wife shares a similar story. She said when she was growing up, her dad used to shave, and she would he would like put a dab on her nose, and then she would like take it and then like spread it across her face. And
there
then,
you go.
And later on, like try and shave. And then that probably wasn't a good idea.
No blades within arm's reach of the child.
Yeah.
But Ovir, I love that you've got such great page turns in this book. And I think I say that because I don't always see that in picture books with the same, I don't know, pop or punch as you have in this. It comes a lot in graphic novels. I know it's a lot. Yeah, man. But I love you've got your setup. And then predictable punch. It's every single time it's just like Daddy.
Yeah.
But it's a surprise every single time, too. I think especially I would like to think for the reader, for the child. And I've read this to my students at school.
Uh-huh.
But seeing yourself as the child, you know, my morning is my favorite time. When I wake up, I'm rested and excited to see the sunrise. You have the child, the sun shining in through the window, and there's this like nice yellow glow on his face. And
mm-hmm.
he's excited, and you flip the page, and it says, just like Daddy, and the page is essentially black,
yeah.
uh-huh. and Daddy is yawning.
Well, and it's an autobiography, more or less. you know, it's just like, yeah. Oh, yeah, what goes on in my house? Yep, I get up at 5, and, you know, I try and start my day. And so it's just observing, you know, and trying to, you know, one of the things I try to do in the book is, sorry to cut you off, by the way.
No.
Was... You know, we sell these to both kids and adults, you know, and it's the adults that ultimately buy the book. So one thing I try to really keep in mind is that audience, you know, the adult audience. You know, when I read like Calvin and Hobbes, it's like, you know, or Peanuts, you get that, you know, it's something that an adult and a child can both enjoy for different reasons. And so that was kind of the thinking behind, you know, the page turns is that, you know, here's something for the child to sort of, you know, look at and you know, wonder. And then you turn the page and, you know, most kids still enjoy it because it's an illustration, but it's more for the parents, you know, and when it says just like Daddy, it's like that's the punchline for the parents to get, you know, that's the gag for them, you know. So it is literally like one page is for the child and one page is for the parent.
That. Well, I love in that thought too that you're almost like making sure that the both audiences are engaged the entire time. Like you're almost checking in. Like,
yeah.
Hey, parents, I still got you, right? Just like Daddy. Oh, kid, no, look, here's you doing it.
Right.
But the well, also the ending too. The way that you and I don't need to spoil it, but the way. I don't know. I'm seeing you. I'm seeing you as a dad in the end.
Mm-hmm.
But the reminder that. As much as the day-to-day is what it is, and it's grueling for a parent, and the child has just unending energy.
Right.
That we, I guess, what I'm connecting with there is that there's never a day when I'm too tired to mm-hmm. play with my son or to hold my daughter. There's never ever a day I'm never too tired.
Right.
And I said to my wife the same thing too, because right now she's at home with the baby and I'm at work all the time, and then. When I get home, I'm sort of entertaining the boy until he goes to bed.
Mm-hmm.
But even after he goes to bed and she and I get just 30 minutes together on the couch watching half of Game of Thrones before we both fall asleep or whatever, mm-hmm. it's still that idea that just even though we're pushed beyond exhaustion, finding the time
still
for each other.
Yeah.
And it's mm-hmm. it's still a wonderful thing, and it always pays off. It's always a wonderful thing.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm actually taking the year off from Leica and the studio life. just to focus on doing books. And, you know, my kids, you know, knock on the door or they'll just, you know, come in if the door's unlocked. And it's always like a pleasant break, you know, for me to them, for having them, to have them just come in and, you know, spend some time together.
Are they in school yet?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Some of them are.
Okay. So they, do they, are they aware of like, your office being like an office space, like they know
it's
okay to interrupt sometimes,
like,
or
Pee-wee's Playhouse in a way, you know, it's like they come in and they're like, you know, there's all these markers and pens, all of my Prismacolor markers and pencils are completely gone. So there's $500, you know, but you know,
but
I'll go upstairs, like, you know, a few weeks later and I'm like, where is that ultra blue, you know? And then I'll just, I'll see it there in the corner, you know, by the dog, by the dog food, you know, just covered in hair. And I was like, oh, there's $4. Great. You know?
Yeah. But your supplies probably look so attractive to play with.
Yeah.
Way better than whatever they have.
And now they see me, you know, drawing and painting on my Wacom Cintiq screen.
Yeah.
So, you know, they've really taken a liking to that. I'm like, now, you know, that's $3,000, guys.
Yeah. But do you find that do they want to be with you all the time, or are they able to kind of separate, this is time for daddy to work?
Yeah, it's, I mean, they would like to hang out, but they do, they do understand, you know, that I'm like, hey guys, look, I got to get some work done, you know, so you guys need to go, you know, upstairs or in your room or whatever and finish your work up or finish your drawings. Sometimes I let them sit in here and doodle at my drafting table, or they'll just like pick up a book, you know, and sit on. I have a couch, lounging couch in here, and they'll just like hang out in there. But, you know, when they start getting feisty or start, you know, getting at each other, I'm like, all right, guys. The door
well,
is closing.
But that's cool that they get to hang out in your space and see how you create the stuff you create, and that there's stuff everywhere. There's supplies everywhere and different tools everywhere, and that's just anything that they get to grow up. And I know that you have done work with, well, you said with Leica and with DreamWorks and Disney, and you've done, I don't know, you've worked with characters that they recognize as well as creating characters of your own. So that's just, I don't know, that's just a neat thing for me to even imagine, that there's characters that they're growing up loving already, and to know that their dad has a role in that character's story, as it were, that character's life, as it were.
Yeah, it is interesting. I always wonder how they're going to turn out, you know, because, like, I didn't grow up. I mean, my dad was a carpenter, and he drew his own blueprints, but that's probably where I got, you know, some of my artistic side from. But, you know, I'm always curious. I'm like, you know, they see this art supplies and these drawings and paintings all over the wall and books on the shelf. And you always kind of wonder, like, how is that going to influence, you know, their sort of take on the world, you know, when they grow up.
I have the same experience thinking, like, my kid is growing up immersed in books.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
What will this translate to?
Yeah. What am I creating here? You know?
Yeah. Cause maybe it's just that, I mean, cause it's always a surprise, right? Maybe it'll be literal. They'll end up being artists themselves or animators or whatever. Maybe it'll just be that just the idea of storytelling helps them to do, I don't know, something you'd never even be able to imagine. They end up working for like world relief organizations to help tell the stories of disenfranchised people or something.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's interesting. Sometimes it turns on itself too, you know, like, sometimes they'll see so much of it that it's oversaturated where they want to get away from it, you know? So instead of doing what, following in your footsteps, they'll do something completely different, you know?
It could happen.
That sounds interesting to them and new and fresh, you know? It's like, oh, you know, what is politics? You know, what is being an attorney? Ooh, accounting sounds amazing.
Well, that's kind of the, if you bring it back to just like daddy, that's kind of the,
right.
Daddy's job sounds amazing. Look at the things he gets to do.
Yeah, I did a school reading today. Actually, I did two of them in one day.
Yeah.
Today. Yeah. And interestingly enough, when I turned to the pages where Dad is at the table, you know, reading his books, quote unquote.
Yeah.
I got some chuckles out of the kids too. They're like, ah, he's he's not reading his books, you know. And so it's pretty fun. They still get it, you know, even though I did ask them, I'm like, how many of you are looking forward to doing your taxes, you know? And they start to giggle, and so it's fun, you know.
You've got such great images in this movie. I love that in the way that the spread you're just talking about, the way that the kid is framed by all of his artwork and working on those different projects, and then the dad is then framed likewise in these gray sheets just piled up. I feel like you've got a really good control of color and lighting, and I don't know how else to say it other than although the illustrations are clearly illustrations, they feel like snapshots of a set.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was definitely trying to go for that. I think, you know, with all of my illustrations, I try and really try and figure out how to capture the feeling of a scene, you know, whether it's through color or shape language or line, tones, color, all that stuff. You know, it's like you take all those different components and you kind of ask yourself, you know, what best serves this feeling? You know, what is the feeling I'm trying to convey here? And so, you know, the boy's in his class, and, you know, classrooms are already colorful as they are, but you try and just amp up, you know, some of the saturation and colors, and, you know, still try and keep it balanced, you know, try and find a color harmony within that. But then you want to contrast that, you know, with the page turn and where dad's working, you know.
You've built so much. I don't mean to cut you off. I apologize for that.
No, it's fine.
You've built such a realized scene on page after page. I need to share with you, I'm sure you're now getting this because you're in schools.
Mm-hmm.
When I've read this to kids, I marvel at how much they are taking in on the page. I think because you haven't overcrowded your page, and yet you've given things for the eye to discover or to wander to. Just on that page you were talking about, where the kids in the school, of course, where the kids in the school, I had kids, kindergartners in particular, calling out the different drawings that were on the wall. There's a digger, there's a bus. And I thought, when does this happen that kids care about what drawings other than they're seeing themselves? That's
right.
What I would have drawn. That's what I have drawn, or what I'm interested in. And that, it's that practice in every page that you've got, from looking at what the kid's eating to compared to dad to, I don't know. There's so much I'm going to fanboy on you quite a bit here. I can feel it. I'm going to try to rein it in.
I already told you, I can't keep up your enthusiasm, but you know.
Well, so here's, you can end up telling me that this comes from you working in animated stuff, but the way you have your characters come to life on the page, I feel like if I were to cut out or isolate all of the different poses you have this boy in throughout the book and dad in throughout the book, you're showing so many different – you're just the positions that the kid is in alone is telling so much about that character from I'm flipping through the – I'm sure on the recording you're hearing like pages flipping because I'm keep looking at this book in my lap. But from like the kid's cheeks full of his cereal to the – contented smile of doing the illustrations or doing the artwork in class to different things like that. We're just seeing so much of this child just in the different spreads, the different ways.
Yeah. Well, thanks for picking up on that. That's very observant. And that's actually, that's basically what I'm doing, is just observing, you know, what I go through, you know, what would I be doing in that situation, you know? And if it's like, you know, they said the boy and it's got his little smirk as he's drawing, that's something that I observe my kids, you know, when they're just doodling, you know, and kind of lost in that world, you know, it's like they don't have like this big grin or a googly eyed, you know, but it's very subtle, you know? And so that's something that I try to capture a little bit, you know?
Well, it works really well, and upon investigating the book more and more, as, again, I've had this book for, I don't know, a month or two now, so I've really gotten to know it, which is a really special thing for me.
Oh, thanks.
But, yeah, well, I mean, gosh, this is what you get to go through. Well, you've gotten to know it because you created it. But I mean, this is now what you get to experience now that the book is out in the world, that you're going to have kids reading it and returning to it.
Yeah.
Over and over. But I love the symmetry in the illustrations in that it's obviously intentional. You're the one that created it, and it wouldn't happen that way randomly. But there's such beautiful symmetry to it in that it's not – I can't just quickly flip the pages and see the dad appear where the boy was or in the same exact position.
Hmm.
But the way you've orchestrated the scene in each spread – mimics or partners with the other in the way that I would love to be, I don't know, in some sort of gallery showing with you.
Oh, thanks.
With your art, just to see them side by side, just the pairings.
Wow, appreciate that.
Yeah, I think that it's a really beautiful, well, I mean, just to say it out, I guess, it's just an example of how a picture book is art, about how it's some of the first art that a kid will hold, and the way you're communicating through art in this book, Ovi, is so much deeper than even your words convey.
Oh, thanks. Appreciate that. I definitely consider myself primarily a visual storyteller as opposed to, you know, a writer. I feel like I write because I have to, but I like telling stories through pictures first, you know, and using the visual language as opposed to the, you know, textual language first. So that just comes from that, you know. It's a picture book, and I want to just make the most out of that page, you know, which is why they're all basically a spread. You know, I try and use both pages to just draw one illustration. I actually find that I'm writing some other ones right now too, and I keep going back to that spread, you know, and trying to utilize that as much as possible.
Doing it that way, I like that.
Yeah. So, but yeah,
if it works, then keep it.
Yeah.
It's obviously the best way for you to tell the story you personally. And so you know, be true to yourself.
I mean, I do have the other side of me too, where I'm doing, you know, sequential panels and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, and that comes
yeah.
from me, doing, you know, comic books and sequential art as well. So, we'll see. I hope to get a few different ones out, you know, and not just sort of pigeonhole myself. But
have you sold anything else?
I'm talking to a few publishers about my next project right now. So,
nice. Yay!
I haven't signed anything yet, but yeah, it's in the works.
But there's stuff in the works. That's good.
I have a slew of books out. I mean, a slew of books that I want to get out that I've been writing and developing. So
sweet.
Yeah.
Would you consider illustrating someone else's work?
Is this yeah.
You see yourself doing?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, first and foremost, I want to get my own stories out. But
yeah,
I'm always open to illustrating, you know, something that I take a liking to or that I feel is a strong story. You know, yeah, definitely.
Nice. Hey, so you were talking about drawing with pencils and also on your. On the digital tablet.
Mm-hmm.
How did you do the art for Just Like Daddy?
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, because being a non-illustrator, it does have that great texture, that feel, that blend of like colored pencil or something like that. But I'm also aware that there are brush effects that can mimic that digitally.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's I try to paint the book the same way I would if I approached it, like using gouache or acrylic, you know, just even the process through layering. And, I mean, the book starts out, with either a ballpoint pen or a pencil on paper. And I sketch through it that way and just try and find the basic composition, to convey the feeling and communicate the feeling that I'm trying to get across. You know, so for example, if you know, when the boy's on his pedal car, you know, racing down the hall, you know, with all the other cars, it's sort of in a diagonal and more dynamic, you know, and then turn a page and, you know, dad's stuck in traffic and everything's kind of flat. And so just thinking of ways to like convey that feeling, you know, and you can do that through just the simple shapes and compositions that you come up with.
So when you and start, you're actually drawing like shapes, you're literally just breaking it down to shapes.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I love that. I love thinking like in an art class teaching children that we're starting not even with objects, but we're more looking at the shapes, the flow. Cause you're right. When I'm looking at that, you've got, it looks like I'm holding the book on a slant because everything is just kind of racing down the hill with the boy, racing with all of his vehicles going down that way. And then the dad, you're right, is just flat close up and it just looks still.
Yeah.
Even his hair looks still.
Right. And then
held and stuck.
The other commuter is just sort of this old man, you know, sort of old in his age. And it just, again, it's like, who would you put in that car? You know, I could have put a young lady, but then that would have been a little bit more, you know, vibrant and maybe more appealing, I guess. But so just little details like that, you try and think of like, you know, okay, well, who would convey this feeling of, you know, dreary sort of, you know, a slow morning, you know,
and so
just details like that. I mean, those come later, but when I start out, yeah, it's basically just like, you know, here's a cylinder. I'm not even a cylinder. Here's a rectangle, you know, here's a circle and here's a line. And then here's this wavy line in the background and that's the mountaintops, you know, and that's really all I'm doing when I first start. It's kind of like gesture drawing, but for a whole composition, you know, like when you first do, like if you do like 5 or 10 second gesture drawings in art class, you're just drawing like that S curve or that, you know, that C curve. And then maybe a couple of legs for stick figures and a head. You're just trying to get that feeling down. You know, it's not about capturing or drawing the anatomy exactly right. It's more a matter of an expression, you know, or the essence of what it is. And so I try and apply that to the illustrations as well, you know, so that if it feels right, you know, even though nobody else knows what they're looking at, if they see that doodle but me, like in my mind, I can already start to tell, like, okay, this is going to feel flat, this is going to feel calm, this is going to feel a certain way or exciting, you know. And so you start using those visual cues to support and communicate what you're trying to say visually, you know. And then the text should just kind of support that or contrast that, you know, depending on what you're trying to do or what story you're trying to tell.
So it might vary from book to book, but how did you build the story of Just Like Daddy then? Did you have, I don't know, the text first and then you started laying out these different compositions, the gesture drawings, as you were saying, like that? Or did you... Do you work on one spread at a time or kind of the whole... dummy of the whole thing?
Right. I just went, well, I knew it was going to be like from morning, like kind of like
a
day in the life of, so,
a day.
So I just started from the beginning and went straight through. Yeah. And then, you know, I knew what the payoff would be before I finished it. So, but yeah, I just went page by page from beginning to end and just kind of thought of what are some of the things that happened throughout the day? Like, what are some of the events that I can display in the book, and would it be funny, and, you know, would people like it? And so I try to come up with like different scenarios or different events that happen throughout the day. And then, I would basically, you know, for the breakfast scene, I would just write, breakfast, you know, they have breakfast, boy enjoys it, dad hates it, you know, and then move on. Just really simple words that just describe what the illustration is going to be about, but I didn't actually have the text yet, you know.
And your entire process, your entire story, I can see it. It just grows.
Mm.
That's so cool that you're working from like the most basic. And I'm thinking from a teacher's perspective, like when we're teaching children writing, when we're teaching how to write a story, to think of drawing, of writing from. So often I think we say, okay, we're going to write a story. It needs to be 3 paragraphs long, beginning, middle, end, whatever, which structurally, I guess, is similar to what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But to say that we're going to start with the most basic of, you know, these gesture drawings, just lines, shapes, most basic words, to just see, does it feel
right?
Right.
Right.
to work from feeling.
Yeah, it comes down to communication. So if it's not communicating the thought, then it can be a pretty illustration. But if it doesn't feel right, there's always going to be that like that sense of like, you know, there's something not right about this, but I don't know exactly what. And that all comes down to how you first compose your picture, you know. That's the basic thinking behind it, you know, and then just using simple descriptive words, you know, for each illustration or scene, you know, as we do in animation. It's like, you know, what is this about, you know, and then worry about what they're saying later, you know, because the dialogue can change, you know. Don't be in love with the dialogue or some clever word or, you know,
yeah.
It's like that doesn't matter, you know, if everything else isn't working first. And so, yeah, you just start, you know, real basic, like you would anything else, you know. You start with the basics and you just build on that, you know. And the text always comes last for me, like the final text. You know, if I get like an idea of like, oh, this would be funny if I said it this way, then I'll jot it down. But I usually try to stay away from like any kind of final text until like it's working visually, basically, you know. And then the text is just kind of like an extra bonus, you know, where it either complements or contrasts what's going on there.
Man, the way that you're a storyteller, as you're saying this, I'm like leafing through your book with a hand over your words, seeing that, or rather a hand over the words when we see the boy.
Yeah.
And then just looking at Just Like Daddy, seeing that I can see the way that the words are in this particular story, they are sort of that fine trim on the package. They're the icing on the cake, as it were. They are the story. They are enhancing the illustrations, but the illustrations are carrying the load of the work. The visual storytelling is really at play there. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the same thing with film. You know, it's a visual language, so. You know, one of the things I like to do too when I'm just like trying to study or practice is watch a film with the sound off. And if you can get like 70 to 80% of the film, then it's well crafted. You know, the director and the cinematographer understand film language really well, and they know what angle and the intensity of the angle and the lighting and the color to use to convey to you a certain feeling or a thought, you know. And then the dialogue should just be extra, you know.
Is that where you started, Ovi? Did you start all of this work in art, in film, in a studio?
What do you mean, for this particular book?
I guess in life in general.
Oh,
did you went to school and then that's where
no, you first I always school? Wanted to do books and illustration.
Okay.
But growing up, I picked up like when I was 13 or 14, one of my friends referred me to this book called The 5 C's of Cinematography, and it's basically a film language book. And so I realized like a lot of the principles were the same principles that were being conveyed in like, you know, Will Eisner's story structure and some of these other books that were talking about, you know, basic film visual language. And so I kept buying more and more books that had to do with film language, you know, like Shot by Shot and some others. I can't remember off the top of my head. Bruce Block actually has a really, really good book. It's called The Visual Story. And he kind of breaks down stuff that all these other guys were talking about really well. But, you know, it's basically the same thing, except film film uses cuts and movement, you know, and sound, but you're still dealing with images, you know. And if you know, I'm not saying that I know how to do it well, but I'm still learning. But if you can figure out the language and what communicates what thought or feeling, then you can use that, you know, to your advantage to. You know, because at the end of the day, whatever you put on the page is going to communicate something. And so if you know how to control that, if you know how to control those elements and those principles and those components, then you can use them to communicate and better convey your thought, you know, or your story.
Yeah, it is so much about, I don't think I've heard someone put it that way before, but about the control of what you're doing, about kind of the intention behind it, of you are guiding the intention of everything.
Right. Because everything there is communicating something.
Exactly. So not to say to be so rigid in the way you illustrate or so whatever, but rather just to be intentional, to control, to be in right. control of what you're trying to communicate. Because you're right, every single thing, I mean, I was even thinking, you were talking about the cars earlier, and I was thinking about how when we were looking at that scene where Dad is driving off in the rain, or he's stuck in traffic, he's not driving anywhere, stuck in traffic in the rain, that even some of the car design, that there's no fast cars stopped there in the rain, much like there was an older man in the car coming toward him, almost like he was looking at at the future, staring down old age.
It works consciously, right? It's a message.
But it's a decision you had to make, or if, right. or if, which sometimes you have happy accidents. Maybe you didn't plan for it to be there, but if you made an accident the wrong way, then it could convey something completely different to the reader.
And let me just come off and say, there's no way I could plan every single thing, you know. Accidents and things that just happen naturally. You know, it's like you think of this office is boring. Okay, well, you know, stage it flat. You know, that's pretty simple. It's not rocket science, but there's things in there that just happen naturally when you do that too. You know, and it's like, okay, well, it's going to be flat, and so you start drawing all these other things kind of flat, and you're not always like thinking like, oh, what is the exact angle of this pencil going to mean? You know, so it's not,
that would be insane.
Yeah, that's
I don't think.
I think only Kubrick did that, but so anyway, yeah. Going back to your question, yeah, I sort of dabbled into like these film books and just film in general as I was like, you know, working my way through trying to become a better illustrator and comic book artist, you know, and then that ultimately led me into animation and storyboarding and so I kind of found myself in both industries, basically, you know, like I studied both of them at the same time, you know. And so it helped me, you know, one helped the other, and I could bounce back and forth, and I still do today, you know. I still work in animation and doing books now, and so it's been great, you know.
It's great that you're able to again work in so many different facets of the visual storytelling medium. And I think the connection with picture books and storytelling and film makes so much sense. And I've also heard a number of people talk about it. I know that Dan Santad and James Burks and Mike Bolt all talk about reading film books like that,
right?
In order to help write graphic novels and pace stories. It makes sense. Of course it makes sense in a visual storytelling medium. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And basically, you know, when you're developing a film, you basically have, you know, 40 to 60 scenes or, you know, and each one of those scenes, when they first put it up on the boards in the story room, they each have one illustration that represents the overall feeling or the tone of that scene, you know. And so that's basically it's basically a picture book, you know, deconstructed on the wall. So it's kind of doing the same thing, you know. It's like you're deconstructing this story to its basic elements. And that's basically what a picture book is, you know. If you take a picture book and you open it up and you take all the pages out and you lay it out, you should get a feeling of you know, the overall story. I guess it depends on what story you're telling too. Some stories are, you know, a little bit more adventurous, or, you know, there's a quest, or there's more there, you know.
Yeah. But laying it out is going to give you that idea, isn't it? If you're laying out all of your spreads and you're going like, well, I get halfway through the book before like any action happens, or before any real connection to the character occurs.
Yeah.
Well, whatever process, whatever the time and editing and playing around with it you took to make Just Like Daddy, I think it's the perfect amount of editing, the perfect amount of work in it. I told you already, I love your book. I love it as a dad, but I just love it for its symmetry and for its complexity in how well it's edited down, to have everything just in its right place, to make the story work. You did a great job.
Oh, thanks, man. I appreciate that. I'm glad you like it. As a father and a appreciator of books, a librarian.
I can't wait to hear more about you being in schools and connecting with children and hearing even more Just Like Daddy stories, because you kind of wrote a book that can evoke a lot of stories with children.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I did two visits today, and they both went really well, and the kids seemed to. One of the comments I got when I was showing it around, when it just before it got published, was that they're like, "Don't you think this is gonna depress kids?" You know, to I'm like, I've never had a child, you know, say that to me. It's only the grown-ups that are kind of like, you know, super sensitive or, you know, too.
It's way, you're looking way at your too own PC, life. You know? Like,
I grew up on The Simpsons and Calvin and Hobbes. It's like, you know, just make fun of yourself a little bit. You know, it's not that serious.
And I feel like if you're an adult reading this feeling too convicted over your mundane job, maybe you should be a reminder that you should be out there playing with your kid every once in a while.
Right. Well, I love it. It almost doesn't matter what you're doing, you know. It's like you get to work and even drawing, you know. A lot of times when I'm in the studio, it's like, you know what? I don't agree with the way I'm being told to do this, but I'm going to do it anyway. And so then it becomes a job, you know. So, you know, yeah, you're drawing, but at the same time, you know, you're probably exhausted, your kids kept you up. And so it is a job. So everybody goes through those same, you know, situations in different ways. You know, everybody gets stuck in traffic, you know, everybody has to do their bills at night, you know, so it's, I don't know. I think people can relate no matter what you're doing, you know. It doesn't have to be a great office job or, you know, what have you.
No. I mean, the takeaway I get from it too is that reminder that these children are always watching us and are always looking up to us, at least as an adult reading this book.
Yeah.
They're always looking up to us. So knowing that we come home to them, that we get to enjoy this time with them, and that we're heroes to them just by being in their life.
Yeah.
And likewise, as a kid reading this, to see that, look how awesome you have, you know, this life that you have, that you get to dress up and be like daddy or be like mommy or be like whomever, and just be filled, exploding with joy.
Yeah.
I feel like there are also plenty of children's books that don't celebrate the joy of just existing as a child.
Yeah.
And so it's good to have both of that paired here.
Yeah. I think the only mistake I made with this book was that it wasn't Just Like Mommy, because I realized later, like, most of the people that buy the books are moms or grandmothers first.
Well, it looks like you have your idea for your next
picture. Yeah, exactly. Book. Well, that's usually the first question after they see the book. They're like, "Where's Just Like Mommy?" I'm like, "Oh, okay. Well, it's on its way. Just hold on."
Well, you've got. I mean, we could go into. This could be another. Second half of the podcast, but you've written a story here that has opportunity to go in any direction.
Yeah.
I mean, even when we talked about grandparents, I thought, like, I have very specific memories and relationships with my grandparents, specifically with my grandfather.
Yeah.
Than I do with my parents or with my friends or with my whatever.
Right.
So there's anything that causes us. You know, that evokes those sort of emotions and feelings is good. And great that people are asking for a Just Like Mommy book because that means they like your work and they just want to see more of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it'd be fun to do one.
All right, man. Well, on that note, I would love to stay and chat, but it just means that we're going to be saving stuff for next time you visit, which I'm sure will be in the near future.
Yeah, sounds
good.
But
before you go, I want to ask, I'm assembling an all-star Kid Lit Dream Team kickball tournament. And Avi, I'd love to know what one person you would want on your team, alive or past, from the Kid Lit world, and why.
Okay, so I listen to your podcast, so I know this question was coming. And I'm actually going to switch things up, I think, a little bit. I'm going to pick not an author or illustrator, but I'm going to pick Dr. DeSoto to be on my team because that book inspired me to make picture books when I was
really?
A kid. Yeah.
That's the one.
Yeah.
Nice.
I used to, we used to walk to the dentist when we were kids, and I kind of felt like that fox, you know, with a toothache having to walk to the dentist. And then when I got there, I found that book, and it just like, I don't know, it's just amazing. You know, that's one book even to this day where there's just so much meaning and you get to see the characters think, you know, and there's a dilemma and a debate and, you know, there's that struggle of what they should do. And I don't see too much of that today. You know, even my book, Just Like Daddy, it's kind of a charming, you know, concept book, but I really like those books that have that, you know, that really depth and, that meaning to the story, you know, where you can read it even as an adult and just, you know, still smile and get a lot out of it. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
On one condition though, there's one caveat. You can only serve Dr. DeSoto baby bouncies or you're disqualified.
You're disqualified. Way to pull it in with an actual kickball term.
Yeah, man, baby bouncies right down the middle. Not to the right, not to the left.
That's right.
I grew up on my kickball. Yeah,
Yeah, man. You're on the league. That's it. You're official.
Yes.
Ah, Ovi, thank you so much again for coming on and for sharing Just Like Daddy and just for being cool with sharing everything about your process.
Anytime,
I'm endlessly fascinated, and I love your stuff. I can't wait for more.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, and you're doing a good thing, so it's exciting. It's exciting to have the podcast and all the other podcasts going on and the whole community sort of, you know, coming into the new century here, you know.
It's a great time to be into KidLit. There's lots of good stuff going on. We're more connected than ever.
Yeah, definitely.
Like what you hear? I'd love to hear your thoughts. Leave a comment on the blog at lgbpodcast.blogspot.com or rate Let's Get Busy on iTunes through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep and I'll see you there.